Okay, Ferret, it's time for more Animal Corner. The people have spoken.
I can't wait.
My main question today regards how you write pets, I guess. And that's a little broad. So let me explain kind of where I'm coming from. So when I write really any fic, I put as many puppies in it as I can.
Yeah.
Largely because like I grew up with dogs and puppies and I know the mechanics of them in a way and how humans interact with them and how I interact with them and all that. And I'm not as familiar with other animals. And so I default to puppies, but I am sure that there are other animals that like in a fic would be really good to write with a kid. Like maybe it would serve as a shorthand for saying something about the kid's personality, or maybe it would really let you, you know, like maybe instead of robots, Tony has rats. I don't know. But like, what would, like, what kind of, you know, there's what kind of animals would be fun to write, I guess, that we, most of us don't think of?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I mean, I could talk all day about like specifically how to write certain animals. But again, I think it comes back to the same stuff we were talking about with KidFic, in that ultimately your best bet is to find videos and just watch them. So okay. You know, if you want to write a guinea pig into your story, go find videos about guinea pigs. You can find out what they sound like, how they move, what kind of space they should live in. So I'm going to sort of leave that aside, though if anybody has specific questions about how to write a specific animal, absolutely hit me up in Discord and I'm happy to talk about that all day.
She is very, very happy to talk about it.
Very, very happy to talk about it. But more broadly, sort of just like how to choose what kind of animal and should you include an animal, I'd say that, I mean, first of all, what you said is interesting about it being a shorthand for what a character is like. In my years of experience with animal owners, I would say that you can sort of broadly divide animal owners into two categories. And one is people who like animals in their space so that they can observe them and cohabitate with them. And then there are people who like having animals in their space so that they can actively interact with them. So people who like fish tanks tend to be observers. Additionally, people who prefer reptiles, not that you can't handle reptiles, but snakes and lizards tend towards observation more than they tend towards interaction. I even know people who have cats and they don't really pick them up or pet them or anything. They just like sharing their space with them.
Is that a bird thing too? Because pet birds have always seemed to me as something you look at.
No, actually, I mean, it really depends on the bird, but birds tend to bond very closely with specific person or people, usually one specific person. So if you're meeting a stranger's bird, it's highly unlikely they're going to be interested in you. Though I have met a few birds that were extremely friendly with anyone who picked them up, and that was amazing. But for domestic birds, as domestic as a bird can possibly be, which isn't really much, but birds that people keep as pets, They can be very interactive. I think it varies a lot. It depends on the bird and it depends on the bird owner. So I wouldn't necessarily say that birds fall into one category. They can fall into either. And it's just about how their owner interacts with them. But most of the bird people I know are kind of like extra bonded with their bird. And it's a very like one-one relationship.
Got it.
But yeah, so I think if you want to say something about the kid, then what pet they would choose could say something about them. If they want a dog, then usually that means it's a kid that wants something that they can touch, something that they can play with. It implies that they have a certain expectation of being active with the dog. Like if you think about sort of our stereotypes about what a dog owning experience would be like, that's how a kid is going to conceptualize it. So they're going to have seen videos of dogs jumping up and licking kids' faces and stuff like that. If that's repulsive to them, then a dog is unlikely to be the pet that they'd ask for. But something like fish is great for a kid who prefers to observe, who prefers to be quiet, maybe less active, but even has a more of a scientific interest in animals. You know, create an ecosystem and let it exist on its own and observe it instead of necessarily interacting with it. You know, even altering it is, you know, buying plants and stuff like that to make up the aquarium. That can be a hobby and a passion, but it's a very different category than sitting on a floor with a cat in your lap and kissing their face. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it could be really, so especially if you're writing a kid who, you know, like I think about some of the kid fics I've read where, like, for instance, a really common trope in Stony is to have Peter as their son, mm-hmm. Obviously, and sometimes he's adopted. And one of the ways that in like a lot of adoption texts that I've read professionally is to help bond with a child can be through a pet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a project that you can do together in a way that is caring, and you're kind of working together. And it would be very different working with a child who wanted to care for a fish than working with a child who wanted to care for, you know, like a cat. Mm-hmm. And then you've got some other ones, like turtles really fascinate me because there are people who like to take their turtles for walks.
Yeah.
But like that also would hit me more as an observation one. So I guess it sounds to me like it could be a lot more creative than we as fic writers often seem to give it credit for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of depth that you could explore there. And I do think that just like with kids, animals sometimes aren't really characters in the story. They're just kind of like a plot device or an empty placeholder to sort of represent something else. But if you really want the animal to be a character or to have depth or to be an accurate representation of what owning that pet is like, then beyond thinking about what the type of pet represents and from a characterization standpoint, you also have to think about how the necessities of the animal will affect how you have to write your fic. So a dog, for instance, needs to be taken outside multiple times a day to use the bathroom. They have to be fed, usually the average is twice a day. Some dogs are fed once or three times a day. They need walks. They need a lot of attention. They can be destructive, especially puppies. Puppies also are a lot like human babies. They don't sleep through the night. They need to be potty trained. They put everything in their mouths. And it's not uncommon for a puppy to end up weighing the same or more than their human child friend. So something to consider if you include a puppy in the story is that it needs to be taken care of even when the characters are busy having a plot.
Yeah, I've definitely, as you've been talking, I've definitely been guilty of a puppy and then never doing anything with it. So I need to be more conscious of that in the future. Yeah.
Again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's an authorial choice whether you're going to make this dog a real dog who's a character in the story or, you know, a foil for something else. And I'm not here to say what's right or wrong, but if you're attempting to write a realistic dog, then dogs need a lot of attention. And it's one thing to sort of leave space but not mention it in a story. But if, say, your characters end up, you know, getting caught in a snowstorm in a cabin for 6 days and they come back and the dog is fine,
then... Oh, that would be right out of the story, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a little unrealistic. But then you can think about, you know, if you want to look beyond what a puppy can do, there's cats can be independent for a lot longer. As long as they have food and water and litter, cats can be left alone for a couple of days and they're generally okay. Jarvis would be able to basically look after a cat, whereas it would be pretty difficult for him to look after a dog. Cats can also be sort of quieter and less active, or they can be very active. Kittens need a lot of attention like puppies do. But they're also smaller and sort of easier to handle generally, and less likely to put everything in their mouths, oddly enough. But even beyond cats and dogs, a lot of parents, there's sort of an interesting trajectory I see amongst my clients where we call it the checklist, and, you know, we'll get a call for a new client who needs dog walking services or whatever. And we'll go and it's like, okay, they just bought their first house. It's a young couple. They're in their mid 20s to late 20s. They've just got a new puppy from a breeder, almost certainly a doodle in this day and age, but the breed changes from decade to decade. Right now the fad is doodles. So they have a doodle puppy. They're very devoted to it. They've bought everything it could possibly need. They hire us. We're doing dog walking services for them. It's usually less than 18 months. One of them's pregnant. We start seeing the ultrasound pictures on the fridge and stuff like that when we come. And then they have the baby. And then the puppy's now grown up and is about a year old, which is a pretty challenging time to have a dog. And they have a new baby. and it seems like chaos to me, but this is a checklist that I cannot tell you how many people go through. So it's actually, I would say, much, much, much more common to get the puppy before the baby. But most people in fiction get the puppy for the baby. That doesn't usually happen in real life.
Interesting.
When kids get old enough to want a pet, puppy is usually the last one that parents want to get for their kids because they've just managed to get their kids out of diapers and talking and all of those things. And a puppy is basically a baby that grows into a two-year-old and never gets older. And by the time that they've had a kid or multiple kids, they are no, like, if it's like, if we were going to do that again, we would have another kid. And especially if the kid is the one asking for a pet, they want a pet that is going to be less of a responsibility for the parent. So I see hamsters are a huge one. They're caged pets, so they are contained when they're not actively being played with. They are relatively low involvement. They are cheap, and they only live for about 2 years, so if it doesn't go well, you don't have a long commitment. If I were going to tangent and say which pet I would actually recommend for kids, I would say rats are a much better choice than hamsters because hamsters are A, nocturnal, and B, not social particularly at all. You may have had a lovely hamster. I have had a lovely hamster. I'm just saying in general, hamsters don't really love people that much and they're not social and they want to sleep all day. Rats are not. They adjust their schedule to whatever their environment suggests and they're very social and they love people. So those considerations are also sort of the things that you might want the parents in your fix to think about if they are getting a pet for their kid. Puppies and kittens usually are not that common. Most of the kittens that I adopt out as a foster go to parents of kids that are older, so 12 plus, and they have an expectation that their kids are going to do some of the work. And most dogs go to families with teens.
That's really interesting because I'm thinking back on, like, in my personal life, people that I know, and then also how dogs have always worked in my family. And like when I was born, my parents had a golden retriever who was, I believe at the time, 3, and a cat. And then when Shannon passed away a couple years later, we got the world's most OCD golden retriever. But like, so she was a puppy when I was in like 7th grade.
Right.
And so like 11-ish, like 10, 11, 12-ish.
Yeah.
And yeah, we definitely were in charge of a lot of her care.
Yeah.
For sure. So
yeah, it's pretty unusual unless the parents are super, super, super pet people and they never ever want to be without pets for themselves. That's kind of a different category entirely, but I find it's pretty unusual for people to acquire a new animal, especially a young animal, when they have kids that are between babyhood and about 7.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, not to say that nobody does or that you shouldn't put it in a fic, but if you're sort of making those parental considerations when you're deciding what animal you should get, then I mean, one option is to make it sort of an accident or, you know, someone left a kitten on the doorstep kind of thing. And then that animal can become, you know, an actual part of the story and that they can be hard to manage and they can be a lot. And when you have a young kid, that makes it even harder to handle them. And if you want to put your characters through that, then that's certainly a way to do it. But yeah, if you kind of want to show the personality of the kid that you have, maybe they're a little older and they're ready to ask for a pet and the parent wants to provide them with a pet, then there are definitely some other options that are maybe more, you know, like rats are social, they're outgoing, they're good for kids that are also outgoing and that they're going to be willing to pick them up and pet them and stuff like that. Something like a rabbit, generally they don't love being picked up and they need you to be still and quiet because they're prey animals for them to come to you. So a kid that picks a rabbit is a kid that's willing to sit and wait and let the pet come to them.
Now, speaking for your 3 selves in a trench coat, what kind of child do you go to, Miss Ferret?
Oh, ferrets are extremely outgoing. I've never met a ferret that was afraid of anything. They're like basically invincible. So I actually love ferrets for kids in that, like I used to actually teach an education outreach class at a humane society. And I would go and I'd talk about rescue and I'd talk about how kids can get engaged with rescue and the difference between rescuing an animal and buying an animal. And we would talk about rats and rat care because their classroom had pet rats that, some of their pet rats were actually provided by my rescue, and that was a whole big thing. But I would bring my ferrets. I had 3 ferrets at the time, and I would give them a talk about ferrets because most of them had never seen a ferret before. And I would talk about how unbelievably difficult ferrets are to care for, because they are. They take a huge amount of effort and energy. They need a lot of cleaning. They need a lot of space. They need a lot of mental stimulation. And then I would basically throw a bunch of tunnels into the middle of the room, hand out the 3 ferrets to the kids that could remember 3 trivia facts from my speech, and then I'd just sit on the table and let them go hog wild. Because I was never worried that the ferrets would get hurt, because they're completely indestructible. And they just, they don't care how you pick them up. They don't care how you twist them or bend them or wiggle them about. They can, you'll feed them into a tube and they don't care. You can hand them off and they don't care. We used to run tunnels down the stairs and they'd slide down the stairs in the tunnel. We used to play ferret bowling where you slide them down a tile hall and they smash into some cans and knock them over. They're really like, it was a great opportunity for kids to get to interact with animals without constantly being told, careful, careful, don't push too hard, don't pull their ear, like don't pull their tail, you know, be nice, hold them this way, don't hold them that way. A lot of kids' first introductions to animals is a lot of no's. And it's a necessity because, you know, they could accidentally hurt them. And with the ferrets, it was great because it was like, just try everything. They'll let you know if they're uncomfortable and you hold them a different way. Like, be bold. And they really got a chance to experiment and engage with them and sort of make their own little kid decisions. And it was really cool to watch them, like, you could see them learn. You could see them try to pick the ferret up just from the like top end and realize that they are actually condoms full of sand and that that didn't work very well. And they'd have to scoop the bum up too, and how to hand them to each other. And Diggy would inevitably fall asleep in someone's lap, and they thought that was great. So yeah, I actually think that ferrets are great for kids and terrible for parents because they're a huge amount of work. So I'd always say, how many of you are going to go home and ask your parents if you can have a ferret? And all the kids would be like, yes. And I would be like, no.
Your parents will never, ever speak to me again.
Yeah. It was like, no, you're not allowed to do that.
So, well, I think this is a really great conversation to kind of say, here are some, you know, like the thing with writing fic is that we can all, I mean, we write like sentient toasters in this fandom, for crying out loud. Like, you can do whatever you want, but if you're looking to maybe have a richer experience with animals in your fic, here are some ways to do it. And I think that's a really great kind of thought process, that even just as you're plotting a fic and thinking, what if, you know, thinking a little bit past puppies and kittens is really interesting. So thank you, Fair. So before we transition into a couple other minis after that incredible animal talk, we just want to offer 2 quick notes. First of all, we do have a rec list for this particular episode that is full of kid fic, art, and fic, and it is our longest list since the BDSM fic, so it appears that Fair and I are not the only people that love this particular subgenre. So major shout out to the Discord for flooding that channel. Marie and I definitely got carpal tunnel putting the spreadsheet together. So thanks so much for that. Also, this would normally be the section of the podcast in which we talk about what you guys said to us in the past couple weeks. And what we've really noticed is that there was quite a lot of very personal responses to last episode's content. I personally got a couple direct messages. There was a lot of chat on our server about how it was a very helpful episode to a lot of people. And it really made them examine some of their own biases. And it all felt very intimate enough that we don't feel comfortable reading anything out specifically. But we want everyone who's already listened and responded to know that we deeply, deeply appreciate that you went there with us and that you engaged and that you have been incredibly responsive and respectful to the 4 people who shared such vulnerability with us, and we can all continue to learn in such a beautiful way. We're really, really grateful. And we will, whenever you listen to those episodes, whether it is when they aired, which is in the summer of 2020, or you're listening to this sometime in the far future.
In the future.
In the future. We would still love to know always what you think about episodes. So if you're catching up with us, never, ever hesitate to drop in to the Discord server or into our Tumblr asks or into wherever our I think our Twitter DMs are open. I don't even know.
What is love,
we sometimes remember we have,
do we have an Instagram?
We have an Instagram. Yes. That I occasionally update, guys. This is a labor of love. But we always want to hear what you think. So never hesitate to let us know. In today's Professor Flames History Corner, we're going to talk a little bit about zines. A zine, by the way, is basically a self-published, small circulation collection of works for a certain community. It is not a commercial entity. That is what magazines are for. And instead, the zine, the creation themselves and the community, like that's the point of the zine. Although, to be honest, the definition of a zine is that it calls itself a zine, so there's some flexibility there. Like, your mileage may vary on what this actually looks like. But there is a real important fandom element to a zine, because the very first things to be called zines were actually based around sci-fi. Other short publications at the time, and even now, are pamphlets or handouts or just general ephemera. But zine and fanzine are interchangeable because the relationship is so strong. So zines have been around since at least the 1930s in the United States. There's some argument that in the UK they happened a little bit before this. But let's stick with the US for now, just because I know that for sure. So 1930s, and the very first kind of acknowledged one within American fandom studies is The Comet, which was collated by the Science Correspondence Club in Chicago. Because the way this used to work is that you literally wrote away, sent a self-addressed stamped envelope. I don't know if anybody, like, you know, kids ask your parents, but if anybody remembers those commercials from when you were growing up, and that was like, and mail away a self-addressed stamp envelope to this P.O. box and get your moon shoes.
A good old SAS.
Yes, which is exactly which is zines. That's what you used to do. They weren't subscription services. There wasn't the infrastructure for that. You wrote away every single quarter or whatever. So there were a bunch of other ones in the 40s and 50s. And to be honest, zines were the first Discord servers of fandom. It was through them that fanfic circulated, that headcanons were born, that debates happened between fans. Before there was Zanga and LiveJournal and fanfic and AO3, there were zines. The most famous one, arguably, is Spokanalia, which launched in 1967, and it marked a significant shift in the relationship between fans and creators in general. For example, a letter writing campaign that was launched kind of through the zine led to the original Star Trek show being renewed for a further season. That's the first time that had ever happened. So these guys are the original, you know, hashtag save our show. And that happened through a zine. So truly, everything old is new again. Fandom is like the weather in Texas. If you don't like it, just give it a few minutes and it'll change. And we just kind of keep recycling the same patterns over and over again. But anyway, digress. The 70s and 80s saw zines going from sci-fi kind of more into music and lifestyle. So the punk scene in particular in Los Angeles and New York and London is generally acknowledged as this wide producer of zines. And I'll tell you what, the zine collection at the British Library is wild. Like, just the, like, you know, hand-scrawled notes of interviews with the Sex Pistols that, like, people just photocopied on mimeograph machines and you paid 5 cents for and it got mailed to your house. Like, it's just the most basic, I love this thing and so I'm creating this thing in just a really, really visceral way. I love looking at zines. They're just fascinating to me. So the 90s added a feminist flair to the art form, and we see a lot of Riot Girl zines. And if you aren't familiar with Riot Girl, please, I should be saying, sorry, Riot Girl. please, please educate yourself on that movement. It is utterly amazing. And then, of course, the internet happened. And the best collection of kind of online zines, especially, but also of the Riot Girl zines, so gender-based zines, the biggest collection is at Duke University. And most of their collection is digitized. So I've thrown the link in the show notes, and you can have a good old flip through. So there is now online zines about everything, including Marvel. As of this recording, according to fan lore, there are 63 Marvel fandom zines, and we will link them in the show notes for you to check out.
You may or may not know that there's actually a Steve Tony zine in the works right now. There's an amazing group of writers and artists involved, and we're rapidly approaching the final due date for the pieces for that zine, which means that I think very soon you should be seeing more info about how you can get a copy of this wonderful piece of Sony creativity in your own hot little hands very, very, very soon. If you haven't heard of it and you want to know more, including who's going to be involved, we'll link the Tumblr for the zine in the show notes. I know I have finished my pieces and it's just killing me that I can't talk about them.
Yeah, I am so excited for this thing. I'm so excited. I can't wait to read everybody's works when it comes out. So, but there's also, like, when I was scrolling through the fan lore site today, there's a zine entirely for Supreme Family of just all conversations about Strange, Tony, and Peter.
Wow.
It's as varied, I think, in some ways as the AO3 tags are. Like, yeah. It's really beautiful. So zines are a huge part of fandom history and current fandom life that a lot of fans may never have encountered. I've found throughout a lot of my academic studies into how people communicate, zines are frequently kind of dismissed because they're made by fans for fans as a community. But you all know that here we celebrate fans, obviously, and we think that how we come together as a community and create these characters that we love is a really, really beautiful mark of how we do life together. And zines are a massive part of how we've always done that. They've nurtured ways for fans to interact before the ease of the internet, and we owe a huge debt of gratitude to everyone who ran and participated in the ones in days of yore, and also a huge debt to everyone who continues to do so to this day and keeps up this very particular and beautiful form of fan creation. So that is, in a nutshell, your basic history of zines. We've thrown a bunch of links in the show notes. We'll definitely encourage you, and we'll be talking more in the future about the Steve Tony zine in particular. But if anyone is listening and they run their own zine, and I have not mentioned it, or you don't think I know about it, I want to know about it, and we would love to share it with everybody else, and we'd love to talk to you about why you have your zine. So please share your stories about your interaction with zines, whether you created them or wrote for them, or you're in the Steve Tony zine and you are also dying to talk about it and are under a gag order and can't. We would love to hear from you. Please hit us up in the comments and tell us what you think about zines. And that has been Professor Flame's History Corner.
And if you want to get involved in fandom in other ways, as always, up next, we have our events forecast.
Hi fandom, this is Only More Love, here once again to tell you all about what's going on challenge-wise in a Marvel fandom near you. A brief note before I begin with the current events. You'll be able to find everything I mention in this forecast, linked and explained, in the show notes of each episode over on podonthesuit.com. Okay, so now for the numerous and fun events that are happening. We talked about the various initiatives springing up to try and raise money for Black Lives Matter last time. Creators, signups have arrived. Marvel fans for BLM signups will run until June 28th, with Browsing Week opening on June 29th, and running till July 5th. And finally, the auction itself will take place July 6th through July 12th. Another initiative happening is the Pan-Fandom BLM Equality Auction, which runs on Dreamwidth. Offers have been posted and can be browsed and bid on until June 26th. The Tiny Reverse Bang is underway. Its submission period just started and will go on until July 10th. while the round itself is set to last until September for Big Bang season. Steve Tony artists, show us your talent. We want to love it. The fan works like its 2012 Prompt Fest just hit the 1 month left mark this week. If you long for simpler times and tower fix, this is the event for you. All universes are welcome, and a few are already represented in the prompts. But prompting also stays open until the end of the fest on July 13th, so you can always add to them. There is no claiming required, and no minimums or restrictions on the type of fills you can make. Have fun! You being a fluff bunny, an angst weasel, or a flanxed hybrid does not change the fact that the Steve Tony games have been ongoing for a week, and they're going strong with 96 Stony works already posted at the time of preparing this forecast. For those unfamiliar with the games, it takes the form of a bingo card with prompts both traditionally fluffy or angsty, and both teams battle through their fills to get the most points. Check out the rules for more info, or join the Discord server to ask any and all questions. Your hosts are on opposite teams of this for some added Flareit Civil War fun. Claiming for the Marvel Undercover Prompt Fest is open, and will stay open until July 12th. Posting will begin on July 13th. As a reminder, this year's theme is music, so take a look at the prompts, listen to some of the songs, and maybe they'll spark something. Artist signups for the Iron Husbands Big Bang are only open until tomorrow, June 22nd. So if the MIT Husbands are your jam, give it a go. Claims will happen on July 3rd, and posting will begin on July 31st. Sam and Steve are now packing their bags and checking for any missed sunscreen tubes for their Sam-Steve vacation week, which will start in a week on June 28th and run through July 4th. The mods are posting some prompts on the DW.com for inspiration. At the same time, Tony and Steven will have their own downtime with the Iron Strange Week, which will go on from June 28th through July 11th, including 1 week of amnesty to give people more time to get their works in. There are no minimum requirements either, and every form of media is allowed. On the matter of ship weeks, the Sinful Spider Week announced its schedule, rules, and prompts. So if you ship Tony or Steve with Peter, give their blog a look. It will run from August 23rd to 29th, so you'll have plenty of time to prepare. Also on the charity front, Marvel Trumps Hate is looking for mods to help for their next edition, for both the events running and for their event server. Both those positions would require you to be available throughout the week from the start of September to the start of November. If you're interested in helping for this staple of our fandom, follow the link in our show notes for more information and contact links. The Cap IM Bingo and Comment Bingo, Cap IM Kink Meme, and Lights on Park Avenue, and Starker Festival's Starker Summer Bingo are still open for participant signups and or contributions, and the links to all of these are still in our show notes of the past episodes. The Cap IM BB mods are also holding Discord chats for authors, so please keep an eye out for the announcements of the time they'll take place, as they will vary to catch as many time zones as possible until September. This has been your events forecast. I'll see you next episode. Until then, please be safe, be well, and of course, happy shipping.
Hello, fandom. This is Iron Lawyer.
And I'm Catalina Hart, aka Cat, and we are here to update you on the ongoing Steve Tony games.
First, we'd like to thank everyone who has participated so far. You have all blown our expectations out of the water. We had some very exciting first 2 weeks of the games.
Before we continue, here's a quick reminder how the games work. Both teams share a bingo card and create works for the prompts. Creating for prompts that are marked as typically belonging to the other team earns you double points. There are also several bonus prompts you can include to maximize points, and best of all, you don't need to sign up and can create for both teams if you want.
We are recording this on Friday, and the current scores are 695 to 667 for Team Angst, but we're sure the scores are rising as we speak. If you want to see the current scores more often than our once-a-week scoreboard posts, you can join our Discord or check out the official Phil's spreadsheet, which comes with links to all the wonderful creations you have made. There are 106 Phils in total at the moment.
The honour of the first submitted Phil went to Team Angst, but Team Fluff didn't take long to catch up and managed to get the first bingo and the first blackout of the games.
At the moment, both teams have 7 bingos and 1 blackout.
One thing we are very happy about is that everyone is taking chances in creating for smaller universes and even trying out new fanwork types for them.
So far, Team Angst has created for 16 different canon universes that are neither the MCU nor the main comics universe 616, and Team Fluff has created for 15 such universes.
The fanwork types submitted for Team Angst so far are Fic, Art, Potfic, Vits, Edits, Playlists, and Reclists. Team Fluff is still missing Potfics and Vits. If the type of fanwork you do hasn't been listed, feel free to check in with the mods to see if it's able to be submitted. We love seeing all the different types of fanworks we haven't even thought of.
Likewise, we love that people have submitted works that aren't in English. At the moment, we have 1 German poem, 1 French fic, 1 Spanish, 1 Portuguese, and 1 Japanese playlist. Remember that for fix and playlist, non-English works get a bonus point.
Team Fluff were the first to claim the team achievement points for all canon reference bonus prompts used, for all AU and Tropes bonus prompts used, and for all Kink bonus prompts used. Team Angst has claimed the canon reference points as well, but is still missing Aliens Make Them Do It for the AU and Tropes team achievement and Blindfold for the Kink bonus prompts.
We would also like to give a special shout-out to the people who have managed to create fills for the maximum number of points. Sadistic Sparkle submitted 3 works, a playlist, art, and fic. And Jebia and Be the Flame each submitted a fic worth 14 points. All 5 of these fills were for Team Fluff. Congratulations!
This is it from us for now. We'll be back next episode with more Steve Tony Games updates. Until then, happy creating!
And that's a wrap on episode 9.
Thanks to Kelsix for our incredible art and the Pottscast server for the flood of fantastic recommendations for the Reclist. Of course, to our podcast staff for keeping the wheels on the wagon. And thanks to Sci-Fi Girl 47 for providing our plug fic today. Check the show notes for links.
And thank you, especially to Iron Lawyer and to Kat for providing that personalized update on the Steve Tony games. We feel so special. Also, all of you need to join Team Fluff.
Join Team Angst. Team Angst.
Join Team Fluff.
You want to be on the winning team, and Team Angst.
You want to join Team Fluff.
We have cake. We have spreadsheets. It's awesome.
We have happily ever afters and joy.
And you can kittens. Look. You can be on Team Angst and still write a happy ending. Totally valid. You guys
no.
want that? You want that achy pining? That
no.
Oh,
you want
yes.
happy fluff?
No, no.
So the flare at Civil War will continue for the length of the games. Join Team Fluff.
Team Angst. And moving on. Don't forget, Steve's birthday is coming up.
Believe it or not, guys, it is almost July.
Oh my God, I can't even, I cannot relate to that. It sounds fake, but okay. But we want to celebrate Steve's birthday as amazingly as we celebrated Tony's birthday. We have an AO3 collection. The link will be in the notes. If you create something that can go on AO3, please, please, please post it there. If you post something on Tumblr, please at us, the pot on the suit Tumblr, as well as the tag HBDSteve2020, because as I'm sure you're all aware, Tumblr is garbage for tags, and we're really afraid we lost people last time, so we would much prefer it if you could add us. We are going to do our best to find everybody, but if in doubt, you can also DM it to us, send us an ask, what have you. We really, really, really don't want to miss things, so let us know. Get creative. All creations and engagement with Steve's birthday are welcome. You can do art, fic, people bake stuff, make a card, do an animation. write a text to Steve about how much you love him, anything. We also really, really love, last time some of you sent us your amazing feelings on Tony's ships. We want the same thing from Steve. Let us know, do you love Steve Sam? Are you into Steve Bucky? Something else I haven't even thought of. We want to hear about all your favorite Steves, rare pairs, versions of Steve. Hey, write an amazing article about how much you love pre-serum Steve. I want to hear that. And we will get them read on air. So we can't wait to see what you make, and we can't wait to celebrate Steve's birthday.
And then, as always, thanks to you for your comments, questions, engagements. This is, as we say every single episode, your fandom podcast. And we want to make it the very best that it can be for you. If you'd like to share your views on fandom, don't forget that you can comment on the website or get in touch with us across any of our socials. Please keep sending secrets and questions, and we'll see you soon for episode 10. You've been listening to Pod on the Suit. Thanks for joining us.